Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know you have Bloomberg Radio's complete program guide at the touch of a finger? Just slide your screen to the right and look for the green schedule icon. If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Our guest is Mark Faber of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report. Mark, good morning.
Yes, good morning to you, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, thanks for coming on that. Now, where are you?
I'm in Chiang Mai, in the north of Thailand, in the rainy season.
In the rainy season.
Yes.
Your latest report has a lot to do about China. What's the one thing that we misunderstand about China?
Well, I think we can argue, do we have a cyclical downturn or more a structural downturn? The fact is simply China's population is twice the size of Europe and America combined. And the way the U.S. had recessions that occasionally were concentrated in one state, say in California in the early 1990s or in Texas in the early 1980s, we can have in China some sectors being in recession or having even a crashes, and other sectors and other provinces still growing. So this is an important point to consider. But overall, I think that the growth rate we had in the last 10 years, which was around 10%, 12% annually, that this is going to slow down considerably. And that at the present time, there is in China and in the rest of Asia very little growth or no growth at all.
One of the problems, it would seem, would be trusting the numbers that come out of China.
Yes, of course. I think this is a problem worldwide. I wouldn't trust the numbers coming out of the U.S. either. But in general, we have relatively reliable statistics about China coming from the outside and also inside in terms of physical production of goods and services. So, for instance, Taiwan and South Korea, they're these countries' largest export markets are China by a wide margin. They are exporting to China about as much as to the U.S. and Europe combined. So if these countries' exports are down year on year, it tells you something about the Chinese economy. Then you look at the electricity production. It was down in June, and so forth and so on. So we have quite reliable statistics where we can essentially observe that there has been a very, very significant slowdown in the Chinese economy. I'm not necessarily saying that the Chinese economy is already in recession, the way the rest of Asia is just not growing anymore, but at a very high level of business activity.
Well, over the years, Mark, we've seen the Chinese government successfully boost the economy while keeping inflation under control. Does that balancing act continue?
I think it would be an error to think that any government in the world can just switch on the tab and then the economy recovers and then take off again and reduce the flow of money and credit into the economy and the economy slows down. I think the problem in China is that we had, after 2009, mostly a very strong recovery in capital spending. We had large fiscal deficits, and we had ultra-expansionary monetary policies. These policies have produced significant excess capacities in industries. So if you print money here, you may produce even more overcapacities on existing overcapacities, and that, I think, would be undesirable. Now, can they stimulate consumption? Yeah, to some extent, but that and also depends on consumer confidence. And I think that consumer confidence at the present time in China is not very high.
Well, with all that in mind, Mark, do we want to be investing in China now?
Well, this is a good point because stock markets are essentially discounting mechanisms. So the Chinese stock market has performed miserably until earlier this year, and earlier this year it started to perform somewhat better relative to the rest of the world. And maybe the stock market has already discounted a lot of bad news, and I suppose there are good companies in China. But if I look at the good companies, they're not exactly inexpensive. They sell for 20, 30 times earnings, and the rest you may not necessarily want to own. So I would rather wait to buy Chinese stocks until we see the results of the stimulus packages, which I think will fail. But who knows? We can have a bounce in Chinese stocks here because foreign investors will say, well, now they're cheap and so forth.
Mark, there's been a switch in the dialogue over the early summer, and that from the traditional BRIC nations to a new set of emerging markets. I believe Turkey's on the list. But the one that really gets my attention, I believe, northeast of Thailand, and that is the Philippines. What is the Philippines doing differently, and is Mark Faber comfortable investing there?
Well, the Philippines stock market, along with Indonesia, has significantly outperformed any other Asian market over the last few years, especially after 2009. And I don't think there is particularly good value in the Philippines or in Indonesia at the present time. So these would be actually two markets I would stay away from. In fact, I would argue the Chinese slowdown combined with the slowdown in Europe and in the U.S., or slowdown in Europe, I would say the recession in Europe, will make it very difficult for the Asian nations to grow from the present level of business activity. And we had, say, in Singapore, GDP was down vis-a-vis the previous quarter and up only 2% vis-a-vis a year ago. So it tells you a little bit that the Asian economies, they're not in recession, but they're not growing a lot at the present time. In the meantime, stocks are, in my view, no particular bargains, except here and there. In each market, there is the one or the other company that still looks reasonably attractive.
Mark, you look at, again, the investment here. Argue the point that the best way for Americans to invest abroad is through multinational corporations, or can they do it by direct investment abroad?
Well, I think there is a difference between investing in, say, a soft drink manufacturer in Turkey or in Thailand or in the Philippines or in China, rather than being invested in Coca-Cola. If you invest in Coca-Cola, maybe over 60% of the earnings are derived from overseas. But of that, I would imagine that about 60-70% comes from Europe and from Latin America and Australia, so the more mature markets. And there, I don't see particularly strong growth. So to participate, say, in the soft drink industry growth in India, Coca-Cola would not be the ideal candidate. A local company would be better. Secondly, what we're seeing increasingly in Asia is foreign companies acquiring local companies to get a larger exposure to the Asian market. Say, Heineken has just bid for Asia-Pacific breweries. And Thai companies started actually the bidding war. So I think that when you have these bidding wars, nobody will bid for Coca-Cola, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe someone will take a 10% share. But in Asia, you will have, and Latin America and Africa and Central Asia, and so you will have foreign companies bidding for these companies.
Mark, give us an update on Thailand. You are away. How far are you from Bangkok?
Well, it's about an hour's flight. It's about, I think, 400-500 miles.
What is the north? What is the distinction in the north versus what we would observe in Bangkok?
Well, first of all, the climate is very different. We have here four seasons. In winter time, the weather is similar to Southern California. You know, it was warm during the day and cool at night. And we have also rainy season, but it's not as humid as the south. Bangkok is in the south, and Phuket is in the deep south, and Pattaya is not quite in the deep south, but it's also in the south. So the climate is very different. And I think that if foreigners travel to Thailand, if they only see Bangkok and Krabi and Phuket and Pattaya and Koh Samui, they see the touristic side of Thailand, which have become in some instances like Fort Lauderdale, whereas the north is much more traditional and is not yet spoiled all that badly.
I bring this up because, folks, we all know there's a nuance to Steve Roach's The Next Asia. What is the Asian reality, Mark Faber, that we don't know? What is the Asian reality that we need to know for the next 10 years?
Well, I think one principal distinction between Asian cultures and, say, the Western culture is that in Asia, people are taking their own responsibility in their hands. In other words, there are not many entitlement programs. If you're sick, it's your problem. You have to look after yourself. If you retire, you have to look after yourself or your family or your children and so forth. So people are essentially accustomed to have high savings rates and to rely more on themselves than just on the government. Well, the government will do this and the government will do that, and they'll pay for this and they pay for that. Europe in particular, but increasingly in the U.S., have become entitlement societies. And that is very negative for economic growth, for private initiative, and so forth.
Mark, you were talking earlier about, you know, you look around the world, you see bargains here and there. Do you see any here in the U.S.?
I beg your pardon?
You were talking earlier about seeing bargains here and there around the world. Do you see any here in the U.S.?
Yeah, first of all, if I look around the world, for the first time in my life, I started to buy some European stocks, and I will buy more over time. Because if you look at sentiment around the world and perceptions, in 2010, they published a book, Invest in Europe Now. And that was obviously the wrong time. But at that time, the perception was that Europe was very attractive and the U.S. unattractive. Today, the major asset allocators, they all agree that, okay, the U.S. is not perfect, but it's far better than elsewhere in the world. And on the basis of that, the U.S. market has significantly outperformed just about any market over the last 18 months. Say you look at Spain, Italy, Portugal, France, Greece, they were either at the 2009 lows or below the 2009 lows just recently. Now they rallied somewhat. But I think we've seen a major low in European markets. We all know how bad the situation is. It's been sufficiently documented, and people, analysts and strategists, have now wasted 1.5 years' time talking about the euro. Will it break up, not break up, and so forth. But in the meantime, equities have become very, very inexpensive, because if you really think it through, and you think of total disaster in Europe, which would be a breakup of the euro, as the media portrays it, I think that would be the best solution to get rid of the politicians and have again individual countries and flexible exchange rates. But say you take a very negative view, then what is it better to be in the euro, in euro-denominated bonds, or in equities?
Mm-hmm.
I think equities are relatively more attractive.
Very good, Mark Faber. Thank you so much.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.